All right, everybody. Good afternoon. Good morning. Whenever you're listening to this, if you're listening to this right now, good evening. Today, we're going to be talking about claiming your liberty with a very, very good friend of the podcast who's been relatively, I shouldn't say under the weather, but out of public eye. And I'm a little envious, I must say, because he's living his best life. And, you know, we're going to be talking a little bit about that and kind of where he's at right now. And I couldn't be happier for him. So make sure you hit all the links below to figure out what I got going on, where you can find my guest, everything he's got going on, the wonderful Tiger Fitness through the link below to let him know that I sent you, as well as getting all the supplements that I use day in, day out. This morning, I used the sour gummy pre-workout from Pump Chasers. Tastes pretty damn good. Fox & Sons Coffee. Go to foxandsonscoffee.com. Use code Kyle at checkout to let Steven know I sent you wonderful coffee. I think I have a bag. I do. The Brazil. It smells really, really good. But, you know, obviously, if you're listening to this right now, don't drink any coffee because you probably won't sleep, or unless you're one of those weird fucking people who work night shift. I shouldn't swear in the first minute. But, you know, we're here. So, all right, everybody, without further ado, let's go. All right, everybody, welcoming back to the show after probably been close to 100 episodes since you've been on. But my dear friend, Reed Coverdale, how you doing, dude?
I'm doing well, Kyle. I'm a little out of practice being on both ends of a podcast. You did remind me I was actually on the Jackman's podcast somewhat recently, but that was the last one. Last time I did one was in October. So, yeah, it's been a while, but good to be here with you, man.
Yeah, no, well, I'm very, very glad to have you. As I told you off air, we're probably not going to talk about current events too much because everything's pretty much fake and gay. I think we could probably agree on that. But what's your impression with the whole Julian Assange deal that's going on lately?
So I haven't read a ton about it, but from what I understand, he accepted a plea deal, basically. So he pleaded guilty and he's been released. And I think he's back in Australia now, right? I believe he's made it back. Yeah. So I guess the thing that's missed by a lot of people, in my opinion, is a lot of these things with like Ross Ulbricht and Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, and then also with politicians, it becomes a cult of personality thing. It becomes about the person, where to me, these things are about the idea. So yeah, I mean, I feel horrible for Julian Assange as a person, but the more overarching horrific thing about this whole deal was he was, you know, prosecuted and indicted and imprisoned for publishing information. And that hasn't changed with the plea deal. And in fact, in some ways, it kind of cements the precedent that that is the way we go forward. So in my mind, this isn't a victory. This is, I mean, I'm glad for Julian that he's out of prison. But as far as the cause goes or the overarching point of that whole thing, it was pretty much a total loss. As far as why Biden would go for something like this right now, I understand why people are saying he's trying to appeal to voters, but I don't really know what voters he would appeal to with this. I don't think he's really trying to court people who would care about this very much. So I could be wrong on that, but the timing does seem like it would have the election in mind, but it does seem like a kind of pointless move for him. He didn't pardon him, and I don't really know what brownie points this is going to get with anyone who would be likely to vote for him in the first place. So, and then my last thing I'll say on this is, why did anyone think Donald Trump was going to free Julian Assange? He's the guy who imprisoned him. Like, he's the guy who went after him, used the Espionage Act. I don't know why anyone thought he would be the guy to let him go. He should have been, for sure. It would have been an easy win for him, but as always, he listens to people who hate him and will never like him, in an attempt to garner their support or sympathy or something. So classic Trump, like, shoots himself in the foot at every turn. But I'm not shocked at all that that's the way it went. I remember at the end of Trump's presidency, people were like, oh, he's going to pardon Assange. It's like, were you here 2 years ago when he was going after him? Like, I don't know. So that's all been kind of mind boggling to me.
Yeah. One other thing I want to get your comment on before we move to the more main topic. And I do agree with your point that, like, people seem to forget that we're in, like, the presidential election season, and that Trump's going to make a lot of promises, and Biden will too, because they kind of want to get reelected, and people are acting like Trump saying all these things like abolition of the, Department of Education, all this stuff, right, like, he's actually going to follow through on it. But it's like, you realize he's just trying to get your vote right now. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, look what he's saying. He's campaigning so good. He's actually going to follow through on this stuff. I'm like, listen, you guys are getting your hopes way, 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 way too high. So any comment on that before I give you one more thing?
Yeah, I mean, I am going to vote for Donald Trump for the first time ever. I've never voted for him once, not in a primary, not in 2016, not in 2020. And it's not that I suddenly feel like he deserves my vote. I guess over the last year, I've just really don't give a shit about voting anymore. Like, voting is not some sacred act. And this is a huge switch for me. Like, I used to say that your vote is the only power you have against politicians, you know, extorting them for your vote. But I mean, let's just be honest, extorting them for your vote doesn't do anything. It doesn't matter. I mean, look at the Bernie people from 2016 and then from 2020. Who wouldn't vote for Hillary or Joe Biden? What did it get him? It didn't get him anything. So I don't think voting really matters at all. And I think how you live your life day to day is much more indicative of who you are than whom you decide to vote for. I am voting for Trump based on the things that I know he can deliver on. And that is just making blue-haired liberal leftards absolutely insanely angry that he's president. And when I first started realizing this was really back in 2022, when the Roe v. Wade leak came out that it was going to be overturned. And I just remember that night having so much fun and just being so filled with glee, seeing everyone lose their minds that we'd suddenly become a fascist country or whatever they were saying. And I just realized, you know, this is how I feel all the time about every decision that's ever made. And so these people get to feel a little bit of, you know, how libertarians feel when one of their important issues just gets overturned. And what I've realized is, even though I hate Donald Trump, the people who hate him in, like, a visceral, ridiculous way, I hate them so much more than I hate him. And the reality is, it's going to be Biden or Trump. And at this point, after the last 4 years with all the masking and the shutting down the country, even though Donald Trump, you know, kind of tacitly supported those things, it doesn't matter. People will be so angry that he's president again. And it's frankly funny. And at this point, that's good enough for me. And yeah, there's some slight anti-establishment tendencies that come out in Donald Trump from time to time here and there. Like, he's not a dyed-in-the-wool neocon like Mike Pence. So there's a chance he might do something here and there, but, you know, that's not really what I'm putting my stock in. Ofer just said it, I'm clown-pilled. Exactly. You know, at this point, whatever is going to guarantee the funniest outcome is good enough for me. So I'm voting for Donald Trump because I don't think he's changed, and I know what he'll deliver on, and my standards have dropped drastically. So there you go.
Nice. Well, the one other thing I wanted to ask you on, and it kind of ties in with Donald Trump too. Looking back at the Mises Caucus project over the last couple of years, and specifically the Libertarian Party convention, I know you've been pretty far removed from it, as have I. I guess I want to give the floor to you to kind of give your public opinion on that whole situation over the last couple months.
Well, it's really the last couple of years, but, you know, I think, I mean, obviously it failed because Dave didn't run for president. That was what it was all built on. Anyone who's saying anything different, that it was the decentralized revolution or whatever, like, no, that's not why most right. people signed up. They signed up because an exciting, energetic, eloquent, young dude who can like really powerfully convey these messages was going to run for president. That was why I was into it. And I wasn't even a fan of the idea at first. I got convinced that it would be a great idea by getting to know Dave and Scott Horton and all those guys. And so anyone who's saying that it didn't fail because Dave didn't run isn't being honest. And Dave even said that. Kudos to him. You know, I think he's right. Like, yeah, I mean, without him, it's nothing. And what I think was not well handled by the Mises Caucus when Dave decided he wasn't going to run was, first of all, the timing. Like, why not just tell everybody once you know the guy's not running? But then putting this guy Rechtenwald in Dave's stead and acting like he is somehow on the same level or, you know, somehow is going to generate excitement, it's just ridiculous. I mean, when this guy first came out, it was obvious that he was more boring than Joe Jorgensen, somehow quirkier than Gary Johnson. And yeah, he had libertarian principles, but so did Joe Jorgensen. You know, the problem with Joe Jorgensen wasn't that she didn't have good libertarian ethics. I mean, if you went down the line on her positions on the minimum wage and interventionism overseas, like, you would agree with her on her. The problem was her messaging and how boring she was and the weird things she's decided to latch onto. And to me, Rechtenwald was like worse than Joe Jorgensen or Gary Johnson. And I think that's really been exemplified since he lost. Just why I don't know if you got added to his email list somehow of Substacks that were coming out, you know, like five or six of them about why Josh Smith cost him the election or whatever. It's just, it was just ridiculous. So I think, yeah, the Mises Caucus was a complete failure. And I don't think there's going to be a resurgence. I personally was kind of excited to see, I would have been excited to see Josh Smith and Clint Russell on the ballot in all 50 states. Obviously they wouldn't have won, but those guys are both my buddies and it would have been really cool to actually see their names. And I would have gone and voted for them because those are two people that I would really trust to convey at least a powerful message. I mean, if, especially with how I'm viewing voting now, if you want me to get out and vote for you when you're not going to win, there's got to be like a pretty compelling reason. And I would have done it for those guys. But no other, maybe if Clint were the VP for some clown, I still would have done it because it would have kind of been like Spike Cohen and Joe Jorgensen. But I think Clint would have, resisted the control from the top that Spike Cohen kind of had to succumb to. but yeah, all in all, complete failure. I certainly would not recommend giving money to the Libertarian Party or being involved in libertarian politics. I'm not even really involved with LP New Hampshire anymore, and I'm still friends with all the guys. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like I think this is just my personal opinion, and people could take it for what it's worth. But I realized a few years into this, which was about a year ago, that I didn't want to pour my heart and soul and money into a black hole that seems to reap no benefits and only seems to get worse. And people that I have infinite respect for who do, like Ryan Dawson or Scott Horton, you just watch them and you can almost see that their soul is kind of dead from doing this for so many decades and nothing changing and nothing getting better. And they'd probably disagree with me on that, but it's just my personal epiphany that I don't want to do that. And ironically, my parents, they poured decades into the church, and my dad actually said to me somewhat recently that he kind of regrets doing that. And I know that's a little bit different, but it was kind of a parallel I saw. Like, you know, if you're, you could really invest your time and your money and your passion into something that's actually going to give back to you. So, and something that changes others, other people's lives for the better. So why wouldn't you try to do something that's going to, you know, reap some sort of reward? So that was my biggest reasons for kind of bowing out, you know, when I did.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I think when you actually stayed at my house and I had the only in-guest studio that I found on this podcast, which was you, I think we were kind of in a different place, but that was actually like almost 2 years ago to the date, funny enough, where we were kind of looking
over now, I think, right?
Just I want to say about maybe like a week or two over a year or two.
Because it was like 2 weeks before Porkfest. So that would have, I just went there this weekend. So,
yeah. Well, I think you and I were both of the mind that like the Mises Caucus and the Libertarian Party really provide us some kind of like community. But as much as I hate to say it, there's not really many people within the Libertarian Party that I feel like I could call up and they would be somebody that would feel comfortable like taking to a job interview with me if they could like vow for my skills or like say like this is a sociable person that I want like representing me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. you know, it's, when I was in the, when I was a Christian in the church, I used to really think that, you know, that it's not a Christ problem. It's not a message problem, but man, these Christians all suck. You know, like I really believed in the Bible and in the message of Jesus, but the people in the church were just really off-putting. And it's kind of like that in libertarianism. Like the ideas are awesome, but man, like, you know, you go to some of these events or you hear about some of this drama, you just go on Twitter and you see people fighting with each other about everything. And it's just like, man, like what an unattractive group of people. And also like an unattractive group of people that have zero chance of winning, and half of them want to appeal to people who hate them and will never give them a chance to win. Like, it's just like, it's such a self-defeating group. And I do have a lot of friends that I've made in these circles, but, you know, from the outside looking in, or especially from the inside, when you're actually part of it and looking around, like it's really, I don't know. It's really unattractive. And to your point about someone who you'd want to recommend, someone you'd want as a reference for your job interview or something, what I've noticed is a lot of libertarians are just like leftists with blaming the system for all of their faults. You know, they just want to say, like, if the Federal Reserve didn't exist or if there weren't any, you know, there weren't any, yeah, what's the licensing laws for, you know, what's the term I'm looking for? I'm out of practice now, Kyle. You got to help me.
Regulations or corporations.
Yeah. There's a, someone will probably write it in the comments, but when you're required to have these licensing for these dumb jobs or whatever, like they'll blame anything except for themselves for their failures.
Oh, right.
And if you took that person and put them in an alternative world, yeah, occupational licensing. Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. If you took those people and you put them in an alternative world where everything is what they, everything aligns with their utopia, they probably would be just as big a failure as they are in this world. So, yeah, I mean, and you go to places like Porkfest, where I was this weekend, and it's not quite the same feeling all the time. Like, you do meet a lot of people who talk about homesteading and all these awesome things they do to make their lives better, and that type of stuff is great. But when it's just a giant bitch fest where everyone's talking about how trodden down they are and how unfair everything is to them and always making excuses instead of trying to just make their own lives better, that's kind of the pathetic side of libertarianism, I would say.
Yeah, it's I was talking to somebody about this recently, but like where they want to blame, it was actually some of the guys I work with, where they blamed there was that mass shooting down in Venezuela or Cuba or something like that. They blamed Candace Owens or someone for this person committing that shooting. But it's like, okay, well, if it wasn't Candace Owens, it would have been something else. They would find something to blame for why they did what they did, which, you know, once again, some people are just fucked up and they can't be helped no matter what. And that's a perfect example of that. And the people that you're referring to where they're saying, oh, well, you know, if it wasn't for low interest rates, if it wasn't for this, if it wasn't for that, it would be something else that you'd be fucking up. I mean, because if you can't thrive right now, if you can't be above average right now, when everybody else is like so lazy and just doesn't want to do anything, then, you know, why should I think it's going to be any different when like the situation is more so that you can thrive? Like, yeah, it's not always easy to necessarily thrive in today's world, but like you can do it if you really want to do it. And a lot of people don't. Before I throw it back over to you, I want to read this super chat real quick. From our friend Jacob. Reed's new bot is me questioning my views of homosexuality, and I want to try this out real quick. Let me every time someone gives a super chat, I'm going to try to play this now.
Falcon Punch.
So that's a video of
coming up in the world. You got like effects on your show and stuff.
That's a video of Sneeko getting punched in the face by a security guard, which was pretty funny. So I had to add the Falcon Punch to it. But yeah, so basically, I think like for those people that you're mentioning, once again, if it wasn't the Federal Reserve, if it wasn't occupational licensing, they'd find something else that would just completely ruin their lives to blame on. Well, ruin their lives, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's never the right attitude to have, even if it's true. You know, even if everything is stacked against you, what are you going to do? The only person who can change anything about your situation is you, ultimately. You're the only one who... The only thing that you can control about the situation is how you are going to react to it. Mm-hmm. And this is a philosophy that was really instilled in me by my dad. And, you know, you look around the world at people who have overcome everything, people who were born in Somalia or Gaza or something, and they end up moving to the United States and having a family or something like that, you know, or people who, you know, you probably know a lot about this, but like disabled people in sports who end up, you know, doing like wheelchair basketball or something like that. Like you see people who actually do have everything stacked against them, and it's amazing what they'll accomplish. And imagine what those people could do if they were in your situation that you think is so awful and shitty. So, you know, I think that's really what it comes down to, is regardless of why things are bad, the only person who can do anything to make it better is you. So get after it.
Yeah, dude, I totally agree. It kind of reminds me of my one parts guy and kind of my mom as well, where like the people who did legitimately have grievances, like you kind of look at some people and you're like, oh yeah, dude, they have every reason in the world to just lie down and say, I got, you know, the shitty end of the stick, I should just give it all up. But generally those people, and this seems to be, you know, a pattern that like, they just don't, they're like, yeah, this sucks. And they may bring it up, but they fucking thrive regardless. So, a saying that always stuck with me, I remember, I think it was Elliot Hall said something like, some people like to complain about the chaos, but I prefer, or they like to complain about their struggles, but I prefer to thrive in the chaos. And something like that, I think is a lot more of a, you know, productive perspective than it is to say all these things are holding me back and this is why I can't move forward. Well, why, you know, why can't you overcome those things?
Yeah. And you know, sometimes there is nothing you can do about something. Sometimes you do hit a wall. And so I'm not suggesting that people are invincible and that they should just like, you know, think that everything's just going to turn out fine, because sometimes that's not the case. But it is overwhelmingly the attitude that people should have instead about things that they don't.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I guess this kind of brings us over to what I wanted to talk to you about today, because you had messaged me, kind of keeping me up with what's going on with you, as well as our friend Adam Fitzgerald here, who I know is doing a great job at improving his health as well. You were a heavier set guy, which for most of my life I've been a heavy set dude as well. And I think when we met, you were probably a little bit on the heavier side as well. But you had kind of mentioned that you started making steps towards improving your health. So I guess let's kind of walk through what's gone on with you in about, I want to say like the last 18 months, maybe a year. Where were you? What was the motivation to change? Let's kind of lay that all out.
Yeah, so I have been a pretty healthy person most of my life. That's important for people to know. In high school, I was 6 feet tall, 170 pounds, not an athlete, but very, very active, always out in the mountains, hiking, skiing, you know, very, very active. And then into my mid-20s, I was pretty healthy too. And then really, it was like a year and a half to 2 years ago, I started putting on weight. And I didn't even really, it happened kind of slowly, but also kind of quickly. Like it's not something where I just suddenly realized, holy shit, I'm fat. And I don't know if I could share this. I think I could try to share this picture with you. Let's see. Share screen.
Yeah, I'll pull it up if you get it.
Window. There we go. So I could share that with you. Obviously the picture on the left is about 2 years ago. So I weighed like 250 pounds and I didn't even, at the time that this photo was taken, I didn't realize I weighed that much. And I remember somebody took this photo and posted it on Facebook. And I saw this picture of myself and was like, holy shit, am I that fat? Because I didn't think I looked that bad. And around the same time, I went on a hiking trip with my dad, one of my brothers, and my mom. And it was a mountain that I've climbed many times. We were climbing multiple mountains that day. But it was a ridgeline that I had climbed before. And it's definitely not like one of the hardest hikes I've ever done. And I had to bail out 5 miles in and turn around and walk back to the car. And I was like cramping up. And I was out of breath and I felt like I was going to die. I mean, it was crazy. And not just the fact that I was feeling this way, but also the fact that I would bow out of a hike is completely out of character for me. And so this was in September of 2022. And I decided, okay, you know, I should probably try to lose a little bit of weight, try to get in better shape. And I still didn't really do anything about it. And then I remember a couple months later my brother got married and I had been a size 36 waist for a while. So I just went and bought a pair of size 36 waist khakis because that's what he was having us wear for his wedding. And I didn't try them on or anything. And then the day of the wedding came around and I put them on and I was like, Oh God, these things are really, really tight. So there were like a couple wake up calls like that, but I still didn't really do anything about it. And so eventually, I don't want to get any details really, but I broke up with a girl. And that was kind of a moment where I felt like I was at a crossroads because I had a lot of anger and frustration and disappointment and just like this endless well of emotion and motivation almost. Like I felt all the motivation in the world to do anything I could to try to rectify what had happened. But ultimately I knew it wasn't going to work. And so this was in like April of last year. And so I decided, okay, I've got all this energy, I've got all this frustration and this kind of endless stewing going on. So what can I do with it? I could like go cry and masturbate in my bedroom, or I can hit the gym and try to lose weight. And so I started going to the gym in late April of last year, and things started changing a little bit, but I didn't really lose weight very quickly. And then finally in April, I decided, okay, I should actually see how much I actually weigh. And I hadn't weighed myself in a long time. And I stepped on the scale and I weighed 247 pounds, which was...
You know, I remember you called me because it was around this time last year. I think it was actually Rock for Life weekend. So I think it was actually a year to the date, funny enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this weekend is Rock for Life weekend. Yeah, it's coming back to me now. So, you know, this weekend we're playing for Rock for Life and we're opening for Hinder on Sunday. So if anybody's listening and you're in the Pittsburgh area, come hang out and all that. But I remember, I think I went to go get beef jerky or take a piss by my car or something like that. And my phone rang and it was you. And you said, hey, man, I've been going to the gym for a little bit. I've been doing, I think you said the stair climber and I do some other like circuit workout. And I just do that. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and this is a little bit of my habit. This is what I'm doing. And you mentioned you were down a little bit of weight. I'm like, well, you know, fuck yeah, dude, that's fucking awesome. And then obviously, you know, you kind of put this picture up on Twitter and this is a little bit, you know, obviously like a year after that. But I just, I remember you calling me and when I was out there and I, you know, I was stoked for you back then. I'm stoked every single time people have a, you know, kind of story like this where they kind of started to improve their health slowly but surely. So, it literally just occurred to me that this is literally almost a year ago to the date, but anyways, you were saying.
Yeah, so I, like you said, I initially started getting up at 4 and just going to the gym to work out for an hour before work, and I would run a mile, and that was pretty rough at first. I was running like a 10-minute mile, and then I would lift weights for like half an hour and then do 1,000 steps on the stair climber, and so I did this like through May. And then that's when I weighed myself, I think, in the end of May, beginning of June, and found out I was 247 pounds. So I don't even know what I actually weighed before I started doing this. It was probably a little bit more than that. So I'd say over 250. But when I saw that number, it was just like, wow, okay, you need to get really serious about this. So I decided I was going to do intermittent fasting because I'd heard some good things about it. So the only schedule that I could realistically keep somewhat religiously was noon to 8 because of work and going out for dinner with people after work and stuff that would happen like that. So that's the regimen I kept, noon to 8. And then probably in July, I started cutting out a lot of sweets that I would eat because originally it was just the intermittent fasting. Like I'm going to eat whatever I want just in this 8-hour period. And then I started cutting out like breakfast sandwiches from Dunkin' Donuts. And, you know, I mean, I wasn't eating them at breakfast time anyway, because I had the 8-hour period, but like during the day, if I was getting a coffee at 2 in the afternoon, I wouldn't buy a breakfast sandwich with it. I stopped eating a lot of flour and a lot of sugar. And I didn't really realize how much of that crap I ate until I stopped eating it and was actually watching it, because I thought I ate somewhat healthy, but man, there's a lot of flour and sugar and everything Americans eat these days. It's crazy. And another thing I had a real problem with was ice cream in the summer. If it was like a 95 degree day and I worked outside all day, I would almost always go get an ice cream after work. And so I remember telling you this, the secret I found to kicking that addiction was eating watermelon, because,
oh yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Watermelon is like one of the most refreshing things you can have, and it tastes good, and you could eat like an entire watermelon and it would fill you up pretty well. And it's only like 100 calories or something. So
yeah, watermelon is very, very satiating and hydrating, because basically it's most, as with most fruits are, they're mostly fiber and water. So when people are looking to kind of fill up their diet with something that tastes good and is generally low in calories, I mean, you really can't go wrong with fruits, specifically like watermelon, pineapple, oranges, those more fibrous, but like very, very, you know, hydrating kind of fruits are really, really good on a diet, because once again, you can get so much volume for so little calories.
Yeah. And I watched some videos about, you know, how to effectively change your diet. And what I thought made the most sense was people saying you can't go on a diet. You need to change what you eat, because if you just go 2 months eating salad and then you go back to eating whatever you ate before, then you're just going to turn back into the same thing again. And so I was realistic with myself about what I would be able to eat and not cheat. So I ate a ton of meat. Like every day I would have like a pound of steak for lunch and then another pound of chicken or something for dinner. Mm-hmm. And I'd have lots of fruit all day long for that 8 hour period. Eating lots of apples, bananas, watermelon. And then instead of eating goldfish or crackers of some sort, I'd get nuts because nuts are a lot healthier for you. Mm-hmm. And if I was hungry, I would just eat a big meal because I knew if I just ate a small meal that I would be tempted to go eat something at 10 o'clock at night outside that 8 hour window. Mm-hmm. And I just really kept with it. And so I did the 8 hour intermittent fasting from May or June or whatever it was, all the way to the end of last year. And I lost 10 pounds a month for 3 months in a row. And I was down to 220 pounds by the end of August. Mm-hmm. And then I slowed down a lot. And by the end of the year, I was down to 200 pounds. And now I'm around 195. And so I've stopped doing the 8 hour intermittent fasting. And I also don't go to the gym every day anymore, but I've kind of gotten myself into a pretty healthy location where I'm very active all the time. And I'm also being careful about what I eat. So I've stayed away from the sweets, the flour and the sugar and the crackers and everything. And I still only eat two meals a day. It's not typically within an 8 hour window, but during the week, I only eat lunch and dinner. And then on the weekends, I usually have a late breakfast and then dinner. And pretty much every day for lunch, I pack a banana, two apples, a slice of watermelon, and about a pound of steak with wild grain rice. And then for dinner, I'll have a salad with chicken in it or, you know, a pound of swordfish or something like that. What I have realized, the biggest setback to all of this is, you know, with what I do for work, sometimes I got to be up all night fixing power lines and stuff. And I used to be able to go like 18 hours on a piece of pizza if I had to. And now, because I've got such a regimented eating schedule and I'm eating so much protein on a regular basis, if I miss a meal or if I just eat like a sandwich instead of what I'm typically used to eating, I'm just absolutely famished. So that's been like the biggest thing that I've had to work around and just have to deal with. So I meal prep all the time. I get all my meals ready typically at the beginning of the week for lunch during work. And I always have my lunchbox with me, always bring everything from home. The other side effect of this is I've saved a lot of money because if you don't pack a lunch, it's tempting to just go out and eat. And typically when you go out to eat, you're going to eat less healthy food, but it's also way more expensive to go out to eat every day. If you're just buying steak and rice from the grocery store and meal prepping every meal at the beginning of the week, you're going to save a lot of money. So that's also been a big part of the, you know, that's been a big part of the discipline of doing all this is taking the time. Sometimes I haven't prepared every meal at the beginning of the week and I get home at like 8 o'clock at night and have to get up at 4 a.m. But
life is a workout and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King. Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
I'll go out and grill whatever I'm going to have for breakfast lunch the following day, get it all ready to go. You know, that's just had to be part of the regiment. But I don't know. It obviously pays off.
Yeah. What I heard there is a lot of the kind of key behaviors of successful dieters, and specifically more of like the fact that you kind of have like these mental patterns and kind of like the idea of like, okay, well, you know, this is like my regimen, this is my schedule. These are like my general food guidelines, where it doesn't sound like you shy away from them like by default. It just sounds like, hey, I'm avoiding these things because I know if I have them, then, you know, I may want to eat more. They're very calorically dense. And when you look at a lot of the foods that are the most calorie dense foods, which tend to, you know, lead you to more, you know, overeating, they are things with a lot of flour, oils, butters, and then a lot of sugar. And the reason that is because that stuff tastes really freaking good when you put that all together. It's not that any of those one things are bad inherently, but all of them together, you get a cookie, you get whatever, and it tastes delicious. You don't want to stop eating it. And then before you know it, you know, in a dinner, you've eaten 3,000 calories. But, you know, you mentioned a lot of like healthier foods too, where like nuts are very calorically dense, but they are generally healthy for you. You know, leaner protein, swordfish, chicken, I'm sure probably some of the steaks you go for might be a little bit leaner, and they may be fattier, which is fine too. You know, rice and then fruits. So, I mean, like you have, to my understanding and what I can see, is basically all like healthy guidelines, healthy foods that you pack consistently with you. And anybody that knows me, if you go to my work, it's almost comical. For the last, you know, probably 5 years, I've literally eaten the same thing almost every single week. I get tons of ground beef, and it's actually pretty cheap. Like you would think lean ground beef would be expensive, but I think I did the math on this the other day. If you go to Costco, I think it's like $30 for 5 pounds of 91% lean ground beef. And I would buy 2 packs of that. So it's like $60, and that would last me 5 weeks, say 2 pounds a week. So right there, I mean, you're getting a really good quality protein that can last you for 4 days. And I'll go out to eat on Fridays, but generally I'm like, hey, I want to focus on protein and like, you know, make sure don't get something with oils and then something not fried. So like we go to like a Chinese place, I'll get like the steamed white rice or the steamed vegetables, and then just like the bourbon chicken, which is just pretty much grilled chicken with a little bit of flavoring. I kind of center my meals around that. And then obviously like fibers and stuff like that, so that way you're satiated. But another thing that you said there was like when you would have a sandwich, you're like famished, because something like that has carbohydrates, fats, and a lot of foods that aren't going to give you a lot of satiety throughout the long term. So you're going to be starving by the time, you know, a few hours passes by. Whereas like if you have something with like a good mix of protein, fiber, and fats, then you're going to be satiated for a while, because those foods all together kind of satisfy you. And once again, have a, like a nutrient profile that's going to make digestion slow down because of the fiber and the fat, but it's also not just something like quick that's hyper palatable.
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed that a lot of people who have seen the obvious weight loss with me, so some people hadn't seen me for months, when I went to Pork Fest this weekend, and I got tons of comments like, well, holy crap, you are so skinny, which I'm not skinny, by the way. I'm 6 feet tall and 195 pounds. I'm just not fat anymore. But the thing that I've noticed with so many of them who've been inspired to kind of try to do the same thing is they set unrealistic goals. So they'll just do day one. All right, I am cutting out carbs. It's like, okay, good luck with that one. You know, I mean, some people can do it probably, but and the other thing is people who will go to the gym. I picked up one of my coworkers from the gym before we went to work, and he was eating this like cinnamon bun thing from Dunkin' Donuts. I was like, dude, why even go work out in the morning if you're going to eat that before, you know, going to work or whatever. And people, you know, they want to feel like they're doing something more than they want to actually be doing something that's helping.
They want to feel like a good person.
Yeah. Or they just want to feel like, okay, I went to the gym and I walked a mile or whatever. And it's like, okay, that's cool if you do that. But then if you go eat an ice cream sundae and drink 4 iced coffees with extra sugar in them throughout the day, then that's probably not even really going to do that much for you. So instead of doing things that feel good or feel like they're going to be moving you in the right direction, just make the cuts that you actually know you'll be able to consistently do, because then those things will actually make you healthier. I would say, you know, like if you it's just better to be actually making strides that are going to improve your health instead of just doing stuff that makes it feel like you're actually trying to move yourself in the right direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I actually really like what you said there, because I know so many people, and I'm sure you've seen plenty of people do this too. Oh my God. Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the gym 6 days a week. I'm going to run a couple of those days as well. I'm going to cut out all carbohydrates, and they make like these huge life changes. And every single time people start telling me this, I'm like, you can try that, but I guarantee you, you give it a week, a month, you're going to either binge or you're going to fall off the wagon. You're not going to be able to get back on. So like you said, why not make like a small change? If people ask me for help, I tell them, hey, why don't we just try to get you into the gym consistently for 2 days a week? Hit your whole body 2 days a week. Start there. If you could do that consistently and you're starting to feel antsy, you want to do it more, let's talk about maybe 3 or 4 days a week if you're feeling that good. Don't even worry about changing your diet. Maybe just, you know, start to watch what you eat and then maybe try not to snack or do anything like that. Just try to make a little bit more of a conscious effort when you're eating. Start there. See what happens. It doesn't always have to be such a dramatic change, because like you said, if you just go to the gym, okay, well, maybe there's one thing right there where you made an improvement. One thing that I always tell people when it comes to like, you know, sugar sweetened beverages versus non-sugar sweetened beverages is that like, okay, that can of Coke that you have, that's 140 calories. Do you think you're going to get more like enjoyment and satiation out of that 140 calories in that Coke? Or you could literally eat a pound of strawberries for the same amount of calories. So it's just about like being conscious about what you're consuming, because food is a very social, cultural, political thing for us. Like every time you go to a public event, there's going to be food and alcohol, right? You're never going to get away from it. So you kind of have to learn how to navigate in this. And we live in a very obesogenic food environment, as I was mentioning earlier, with like the oils and like you said, the flours and the sugars and stuff like that. These foods taste really good, and we don't do as much physical activity as we used to. So it's very easy to overconsume this stuff without making conscious efforts to like not do some of this stuff. So I really like that you broke it down to like, hey, make some small changes, because I think that's what people need to hear. But that's not as sexy as saying like, oh, well, get on P90X and then do intermittent fasting and carnivore for 6 months and that'll cure all your problems. You'll probably lose a lot of weight if you do that. But can you do that? More than likely not.
Yeah. I'm actually honestly amazed I was as successful as I was at losing weight, because I did kind of take it in bite-sized chunks, but it was lots of cumulative bite-sized chunks that I kept adding on top. You know, so I was like, okay, I'm going to go to the gym for an hour. Okay, I'm going to do intermittent fasting. Okay, I'm cutting out these, you know, wasteful calories that are just going to, you know, add up or whatever. So it was biting off a lot, but it was in small amounts, you know. And then once I was like, okay, I can handle this, I just added the next thing. Okay, I can handle this. And, you know, even where I am now, like I would still like to lose like 20 more pounds and become really, really lean. But if I did that at this point, it would take another lifestyle change that I don't know that I would be able to commit to and actually keep. So, you know, just it really comes down to being realistic and knowing your weaknesses. And also, you know, a lot of it's not even weakness. It's just what you're actually capable of doing because of what you do for work or what your schedule is. Like, you know, that does affect a lot of things. Not everyone works a 9-to-5 job in an office and can, you know, have the energy to go to the gym at 4 in the morning, you know, like things are different for different. If you're a bricklayer or something, then it's not the same. You burn a lot of calories just working every day. You're not sitting in an office chair all the time. So I think it's really an individualist approach and finding out what realistic changes you can make and then just sticking with those.
Yeah, I would agree. One thing that I think people should avoid whenever they're listening to people talk about fitness and nutrition is people who kind of make it out to seem like it's simple or like there's a one size fits all. They're usually bullshitting you, because like you said, it's a very individualistic approach. Whereas like for me at one point, the carnivore diet did seem like the best way for me to lose weight and maintain my weight loss. But then over time, that became less and less so. It wasn't as apparent to me that intermittent fasting and the carnivore diet worked for me. So eventually I moved over to more of what I would call now, if it fits your macros, where basically I can have whatever I want so long as I kind of watch and monitor my consumption. And then even like if I can't weigh something out, which I do frequently, but like if I go to a restaurant or something like that, I'm not panicking because I don't have my food scale and I can't measure the sirloin or, you know, the amount of butter in the broccoli or something like that. It's like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to enjoy this for what it is and then kind of move on from there. I, you know, track everything that I put into my body, but, you know, I'm going to mark it down in there as something. And then, you know, if I gain a pound or two in a week, then okay, well, I can lose that because I know the behaviors that I have to incorporate into my life in order to lose that. So, a lot of dieting is down to, once again, what you can manage, what you can be successful with. But when people throw out these platitudes, oh, well, just avoid seedles, just do this, just do that. Once again, everybody's going to have different tolerances. People are going to interact with their diet and their environment a little bit differently. You really got to find out what works for you. And it sounds like you kind of learned what behaviors work for you, what foods to avoid, and kind of what guidelines to employ to get you to where you want to be. And the other thing that I like that you mentioned there is that, hey, I want to lose another 20 pounds. You would be very, very lean at 170. I would be like bodybuilding ready at 170. That would be a significant lifestyle change, like you said, for probably either one of us to get down there, because I would have to do tons of cardio, restrict my calories a whole ton. Same deal for you. You'd probably have to restrict, you know, your calories to a significant degree, increase cardio. And then, you know, when you get there, are you going to be happy and are you going to feel good? That's the other thing,
right?
You know, right now I'm sure at 195, you probably feel pretty damn good. You look good. You're much better off than you were a year ago. So, you know, if that's something you can maintain, you feel good, you know, what's wrong with staying there? You know, you're good.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I have noticed is there's a lot of hate in the fitness community for cardio. And I don't know. I'm not one of those. What's that?
It's very unwarranted.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not one of those people. And maybe it's because I like doing things where you have to have a healthy cardiovascular system. But I mean, I'm a huge hiker and you sort of need healthy lungs in order to do that. Right. But also just working, you know, when you're not out of breath from having to walk up a hill or, you know, having to shovel for a little while or something like, I don't know where this, it seems like maybe, I mean, I haven't been a fitness bro for very long, but I don't really know where this hatred for cardio comes from. And I would encourage people to do it. And especially if you can do something that you like. Well, I mean, because running on a treadmill is extremely boring. I totally get that. But if you can go on a hike or go on a bicycle ride or, you know, something like that, that's actually enjoyable, then, you know, that would be great. So something I've been very weak with for my whole life has been upper back, like pulling myself up with my upper back, because I've always been a rather large bodied person. So chin-ups and pull-ups have never been my strong suit. Right. What I did is I started rock climbing. That's fun. And that actually exercises your brain. You know, you're not just sitting there on the lat pull down machine, adding a couple weights and seeing how many reps you can get. You're actually thinking about which route you're going to take. And, you know, it exercises your nerves. You're scared a little bit. It makes you more willing to take risks, like all of that. So if there's an area that you're lacking in because it's boring or you don't feel motivated, try to find something other than just going to the gym for, would be my advice, because it could make you feel a lot differently about it. And that has really helped my upper body strength for pulling myself up, and my core strength too. My core strength is another area I haven't had a ton of strength in for most of my life, but climbing has really changed that a lot. Also water skiing. That's something I've gotten into that really exercises a lot of muscles that, you know, going to the gym, you have to choose a weird machine to, you know, to actually exercise. And, also it's refreshing after a 90 to 95 degree work day. You know, you don't really want to go to the gym, but go water skiing with your friends in the lake. Like, yeah, that would be fun. So if you can find fun things to do that also exercise the areas that you need more motivation in, I think that's a huge hack right there. Because if your one size fits all approach is just the treadmill or the weight bench, like, you know, that's not very inspiring to a lot of people.
Yeah, I completely agree with that as well. So like my form of cardio that I love doing the most is taking my dogs for a walk first thing in the morning. You know, I'm up at, you know, anywhere from 3:30 to 4:30 every single morning. And I just, I love first thing in the morning, right after I cook breakfast, put the leash on the dogs and then go for like anywhere from like a 20 to a 40 minute walk. And that doesn't feel like a stress at all for me. I mean, I enjoy it. It's a nice peaceful thing to kind of feel the cold air on my face first thing in the morning. Yeah, you really got to find what you enjoy doing, because if you hate, you know, doing the bench press, then you're not going to do it after a while. If you hate running on the treadmill, you're not going to do it. You really have to find the type of cardio, lifting, whatever kind of exercise you enjoy most, because that's going to be the one that you stick with. Stan Efferding always says, and he's one of my favorite fitness people, but he says, you know, people ask him, well, what's the best exercise? The one you'll do. What's the best diet? The one you'll stick to.
Yeah.
Really, unfortunately, that is the truth of it, is that if you don't like it, you're probably not going to stick to it.
Yeah. Also, like, I hate running on the treadmill. I really do, but I do it quite a bit. Because it's something I can stick with because of where it is. So I used to, and I still think this actually, and good for you, Kyle, you have your own gym, so this won't apply to you, but like going to the gym is kind of gay. Like paying for a gym membership is kind of gay. Like I've always kind of thought that it's like kind of, but like, I mean, I've always thought like, why would you pay to go run on a treadmill when you could go run outside? That's how I had always thought. But once you're actually paying for something and it's in a climate controlled area where you literally never have an excuse that you can't go do it, it's a lot easier to force yourself to do it every day. So, you know, when I had that Planet Fitness, I still have that Planet Fitness membership, but if it's pouring rain outside or if it's negative 10 degrees or if it's 100 degrees out, no matter what, it's always there and it's always available. And you also have that little bit of compulsion to go use that membership that you're paying for. So for me, that was actually an important step. I've never had a gym membership in my life before, but now I do. And with running specifically, I hate actually doing it, but there is not really much better a feeling in life I can think of than after you run a mile on the treadmill. And especially if you sprint that last 10th of a mile, the endorphins or whatever it is after you get off that treadmill and you are just kind of decompressing, like you feel so much more energetic and ready to lift weights or whatever else you're going to do at the gym. So for me, running is absolutely imperative. And I'm not a runner. Like I never have been a runner, but I've gone from a 10-minute mile to a 6-minute mile. Okay. And, you know, I don't know. To me, there's nothing much more exhilarating than finishing a mile run at the beginning of the morning to keep working out.
Yeah, that's actually kind of crazy. A 6-minute mile is fucking cooking. But I know when I used to run, there's a trail probably not even like 2-3 miles away from me called Roaring Run. And I don't know what it was, but it was right beside a creek. So it was like this kind of pebbled along path, and like I would run, and after like a mile, maybe a mile and a half, I would just get this euphoric feeling every single time, no matter what. And the total run was like 7.25 miles, if I remember correctly, or no, 7.5 miles. That was it. And I would typically, it would take me anywhere from about like, I want to say 40 to 55 minutes to run that whole thing. But like the entire time I was just on like cloud nine, dude, it was absolutely fantastic. I rarely run anymore, but just that feeling of just, you know, trotting along the creek, listening to some heavy music or something like that, just absolutely unparalleled and just how great I felt. Now, usually that great feeling for me comes from, you know, pulling some wicked weight on the deadlift. But, you know, that's just where I'm at right now. You know, back in 2020, I decided I wanted to do a whole shitload of running. Right now in my life, I enjoy powerlifting a lot. And then, you know, the other, I do 5 workouts a week. So like Sunday's my powerlifting day. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe, you know, if I have to take a day off in the week, Friday, or like other days where I just get volume on different parts of my body. But, yeah, the powerlifting stuff is more like where I'm at. But, you know, once again, this goes back to whatever you enjoy most. That's probably where you want to stick, because that's going to be what you could be most consistent with. And there's nothing wrong with that changing over time. The same way as I mentioned, like what I could stick to when it came to a diet changed over time. You're just going to kind of have to see what you enjoy. And then, you know, if the workout plan that you have right now isn't working, okay, we'll just try something else.
Yeah. I do want to add something that I didn't really say yet, which is it takes a while for things to start changing, but once they do, it's so gratifying. Like, people who haven't seen me for months, when they see me, they're, you know, the first thing they say is, wow, you look great, or wow, you've lost a lot of weight. And, you know, that really, really means a lot when you've put so much work in. And I know that in the first couple months, probably you're not going to notice those changes, but at least if you're as overweight as I was, but just sticking with it and finding something that you can stay consistent with, the benefits will be crazy. Like, not just will you look better and not just will you feel better, but people's attitude toward you even changes. And I don't think that that's actually a bad thing. You know, I think that maybe I'll get canceled for this, but I do have more respect for people who are in shape. And I don't think that that is wrong. I think if you are grossly out of shape, that says something about your character. Where if you are willing to really have a regimented diet and exercise plan, and, you know, you exercise self-control, that says something about you. And I realize genetics play a role, but for the most part, it has to do with discipline. And I don't really think that that's a bad thing, but people will look at you in a different way if you're someone who actually takes care of yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, like, it's almost on both ends, but, like, people will, as much as I hate this term, fit shame you, where, like, if you do get fit, then some people kind of scold you for it, or, you know, that, like, oh, well, you know, you must think you're better than everybody else now because you chose to lose weight or something like that. It's like, well, yeah.
Yeah, and? Actually, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I worked my ass off for it, so, like, I don't know, when people tell me that I'm probably on steroids or something like that, I'm like, well, you look good, because I've worked my ass off to put every single fucking plate on the end of that bar for every single pound that I lost. You know, I was up around 250 when I first met my wife back in 2018. So, you know, I was pretty heavy set at one point, but, you know, I lost 70 pounds. I'm right at like 200 now. But, you know, it's not easy, but like you said, it's very, very gratifying to see people you haven't seen in a while, and then they're just like blown away because you look completely different. That's a pretty damn good feeling. And not only that, you know, people generally do treat you a little bit better because, let's face it, when you're a little bit leaner, you are more attractive. You're more, you know, appealing to people. So therefore they do kind of treat you a little bit differently.
Yeah. The other thing is, I think fat shaming is good. Not very many people fat shamed me. Only a few people fat shamed me. And I think that was part of why I didn't realize how fat I'd become. And a few people who hadn't seen me in a long time when I moved back to New Hampshire said something, and not in like a, they kind of said it in a joking way, like, wow, putting on the pounds, or wow, that truck driver life was good for you, or, you know, something like that. But it was only a few people, and nobody really close to me ever said anything about how they were worried about me or anything like that. Even when I almost died on that hike, you know, my family members didn't even say anything to me. Don't do that. Like, if you're worried about somebody, I think it's good to pressure them into being healthier. We've lost, you know, there's so many stigmatisms in this society, except for being fat. For some reason, like, it's off limits to shame people for being unhealthy. And fat is not beautiful. Fat is disgusting, and it kills you. You know, it's bad for you. It's not, I mean, it's like this transgender stuff. You know, it's just crazy that we like celebrate it as something good. You know, it's not. It's very bad for you. And if someone you care about is struggling with it, then you should try to encourage them away from it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Fat shaming and bullying really kind of motivated me to go lose weight and get as jacked as possible. So, yeah, you're going to have to kind of deal with this on a case by case basis. But like, I think for most guys, fat shaming will probably motivate them unless they're kind of a pussy. With women, you know, if you go tell a woman she's fat, well, see exactly how that goes.
Yeah.
yeah, man, you got anything else to add?
I just wanted to say also my brother, my younger brother, he's a little bit bigger than me. He's 6'2" and really broad shoulders, but he was 300 pounds and he's down to 245 pounds. And he followed in my footsteps. So I started losing weight, you know, like April, May of last year. And then in the end of July, he decided he wanted to do the same thing. And he didn't do exactly what I did, but he just knew what he would be able to stick with and started working out a lot and not eating junk all the time. And he lost 55 pounds just like I did. So, yeah, it's contagious. Like I know a lot of people who've lost a lot of weight. You know, Adam Fitzgerald was talking about it.
Yep.
I've some people that I know here in New Hampshire have lost weight recently. It's a good trend. So hopefully it keeps catching on and people keep going with it.
Yeah, I agree. When it comes to kind of that spreading around, you know, I always try to celebrate people when they do it because I do think people need encouragement when they're going in the right direction. I completely forgot where I wanted to go with that. But it is nice to see people improving their health. I know Keith as well. Keith Knight had lost, I mean, oh, yeah, he probably lost like a half a person. I remember looking at old pictures.
110 of him. Pounds, I think. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, my God, he went from total fucking Michelin man to straight fucking Chad. Like, Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah, actually, I saw him last year in June, right when I was starting to lose weight. And that was a big motivation, too, seeing that he could change that much. That was crazy.
Yeah. And like I said, when you see people who have lost weight or who are taking care of themselves, you generally do kind of treat those people a little bit more of a favorable way. And, you know, I know that when I lost weight, it definitely helped me out a lot. Like, people looked at me better. I got lots of compliments. I felt better about myself. And I think one of the most notable things for me, and this was absolutely insane, and, you know, I attributed it to the carnivore diet at the time. But I dealt with suicidal ideation for years and years and years. Never anything that I acted on, but it was always kind of like a looming feeling that I had. And then when I lost all the weight, when I think I got down to like 220 from 250 or maybe 200 from 250, that was gone. Have not felt it since I've been down as lean as I have been, which, like I said, initially I attributed it to the carnivore diet, but I think it was really just the weight loss. And there's a lot of data that backs us up that, like, you realize a majority of like the health benefits just from weight loss alone. It's not due to the diet. I'm curious if you had anything similar, maybe not like specifically suicidal ideation, but if there were any kind of like mental things or, you know, little aches or pains or something like that, that you noticed, going from 250 down to 195.
Yeah, so I remember the two moments I had the most shame. One was that hike where I had to bail out. But the second one, I was having kidney stones in the end of 2022. And I was just puking by the toilet. And I remember just like leaning over the toilet and just looking down and seeing how fat I was. Like seeing my stomach just hang like a foot below my rib cage while I was puking. Maybe not a foot, but, you know, like it was down there as I was puking into the toilet and just thinking like, oh my God, I am such a fat piece of shit. And yeah, I don't have those types of feelings anymore. So like they're not very healthy, thoughts. And, but you know, I don't know. Like I said earlier, it was good to feel that way about myself so that I changed. But yeah, I mean, it took a long time to look in the mirror and feel good. Like even at 220, I still didn't look in the mirror and think, oh yeah, I'm starting to look good. It wasn't until very recently that I was like, wow, okay, things are actually starting to come along now. And you know, self-confidence is great. Like it's, I wear a size large shirt, which I actually haven't since before high school. Even when I was, for some reason, this is another thing I've noticed is dressing with the right size shirts. Like when I was in high school and I weighed 170 pounds, I wore an extra large shirt and I absolutely didn't need to. It was kind of baggy and everything. And when you're actually losing weight and you're starting to look good, if you actually buy clothes that fit you properly, then that's a lot of the selling right there. Cause if you're still wearing your double XL shirt after you lost 50 pounds, you look like a slob and people can't even tell how much weight you've lost because it's not it's not fitting your body correctly. That was a whole other thing I found out. So when you're actually like, when you're actually starting to look good, you really, I don't know, you really just feel differently about yourself. And that's a good feeling.
Yeah, I agree completely. Form-fitting clothes is a definite game changer, and you'll definitely get some looks. I mean, back before I met my wife, when I was kind of spinning plates, so to speak, I remember getting phone numbers because girls would look at how I looked and said, hey, you know, here, take my number.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, dude, form-fitting clothes, when specifically when you lose weight, you feel better about yourself because, you know, like seeing the sleeves that hug your guns, it is a good feeling. I can't lie. As douchey as that sounds, when you got a shirt that kind of shows off the physique, you can't help it. You feel good. You feel good about yourself. And, you know, it is a good feeling. So Rudy, we've been going for about 70 minutes now. I think that's probably a decent place to wrap it up if you don't got anything else to add, but if you do, go ahead.
No, I'll just say that, you know, you were definitely one of the people that inspired me, you know, because when I was thinking about how fat I was, I remembered seeing the pictures of you from a few years back. And I watched your show a little bit here and there when you were talking with different guests about the best way to lose weight. And you're also one of the guys who isn't, you know, just a libertarian, like you have skills outside of knowing how to do a podcast. And you know, our movement, if you want to call it that or whatever, is dominated by nerds who don't know how to turn a wrench or drive a truck or, you know, do anything. And so when you see real people out there actually changing people's lives and giving advice that can actually change the way somebody wants to live, that to me is what is really powerful. You know, Mike Rowe is one of my heroes because he actually gives people advice that they can use to instantly change the way they're living. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just, and including myself, frankly, when I had a podcast, would just talk about stuff that you mostly can't do anything about. And it's almost a distraction because at the end of the day, it's going to keep happening. And it's not that it's not good to be aware of those things, but to just fret about all the crazy money that's going to Ukraine and going to Israel and, you know, all the freedoms they're taking away from you. A lot of it, you're not going to be able to do anything to change it. So try to focus on things that you actually can change first. And then once you've actually changed the things you can change, then start worrying about the things that you can't. Because I don't know. I think it's a fruitless endeavor otherwise. The people who are worrying about the things that we can't change should probably have the things that they could have changed already taken care of, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I appreciate the kind words too. And yeah, I think that's the reason why you and I kind of glommed onto each other in some respect is because you and I are both people outside of our podcasts where, you know, you work a very, very active job. And then I got the band stuff. I got, you know, the health aspect of the podcast, not just libertarianism. And then, you know, a wonderful community of people in the automotive and music world that, you know, I spoke to someone recently about a potential opportunity, and they had said that a couple other people had spoke well on my behalf. And I don't know, hearing that was, I don't know exactly how to put it, but I was very, very grateful to know that, like, hey, somebody actually, like, I built the reputation for myself that other people would speak well in my absence in order to give me an opportunity when that benefits them none. So, and I'm sure you have the same situation in all your opportunities that would ever be presented to you, because I'm sure you don't go around to your workplaces just fucking people over. But that's a different conversation for a different time. Reed, this was an awesome conversation, man. I appreciate you coming on, especially out of a, what should I say, online hibernation.
Yeah, if you still have a naturalist capitalist t-shirt, that's going to be like a collector's item eventually. So you
know. I do have one.
There you go. Yeah. So like the currency becomes more valuable when there's fewer items in circulation. So Reed as a guest on a podcast is a big get now. So there you go.
Well, so that means it's going to be like another 6 months until you pop up on somebody else's. And it's then let them know that, like, I don't know, maybe you're running for Senate or something like that. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, definitely won't be that.
Yeah, hopefully not. No, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Reed, if you want people to find you, where should they check you out and let anybody know what you got going on?
I have nothing going on that would really interest anybody. So I guess you can follow me on Twitter at Reed Coverdale. I post there occasionally. I've thought about monetizing it because now you can get paid for saying stuff. And I do have kind of a knack for making people angry and driving engagement. So I don't know. We'll see if I do that. That's the only thing that's really kind of keeping my, I've tried posting a little bit more than I had been lately just to see, and I'm getting over 1,000 likes on a lot of posts. So we'll see. That might be something that continues. It might not. But as far as the podcast goes, I don't really have any plans to continue it at this point. And if I were to get back into podcasting someday, I think it would be more along the mic. I would rather be, and this isn't to discredit Ron Paul at all. I think he's great. But for me personally, I would rather be the next Mike Rowe than the next Ron Paul. So if I were to get into podcasting again, it would be about things that people can actually change in their own lives instead of talking about kind of stuff that we really can't do anything about, I guess.
Yeah, I like that idea quite a bit. Because like you said, we can sit here and talk about the Federal Reserve or, you know, who the greatest congressman is or foreign policy, and I still will. But ultimately, what can you do at the end of the day? But I do agree with kind of what you said a little bit there earlier, where you should kind of change these things you can control first before you ever worry about the external stuff. And that's really kind of where I was when I started this podcast. Jesus Christ, 325 episodes ago.
Wow.
I felt like I was at, yeah.
You surpassed me. I never made it to the 300. It was like 287 or something like that.
Yeah, man. I was looking through your catalog the other day. It's crazy, but I felt like I was at a place where I could put myself out in the world, not be embarrassed, because, you know, I had a good relationship, I lost my weight, or, you know, lost all the weight, and finally at like a good place in my life where I felt like I could be a proper representative of an ideology online and talk about the stuff that means the most to me. So yeah, man, I'll read this comment and I think I'll see us out of here. I like you both because you're examples of people living the principles they believe in and not just talk about it online all day. Yeah. Hopefully. So, yeah, Reed, it's been a blast, man. We'll definitely have to do it again, or, you know, maybe not if you're, you know, kind of stuck in your own place.
Oh, no, I'll come on this podcast to talk about non-political stuff anytime.
Yeah, dude. Well, I dig it. Well, yeah, dude, if you got anything else, I think we'll call it a show there. Cool. All right, everybody, come check out A Common Crown this weekend, Rock for Life. I think we play 9 p.m. at the Paradise Park here in Cowansville, Pennsylvania. It's about 45 minutes away from me. And then we're opening for Hinder at the Raindrop Inn. So if you're in the southwestern Pennsylvania area, feel free to come check that out. And yeah, until next time, everybody, take care.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.